Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and are always looking for your next read, then join us. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast. Today's guest is Jeffy Kennedy. Jeffy is a Rita Award winner author of fantasy romance. In this episode, we chat about what it's like to write a fantasy romance novel, her upcoming book, The Orchid Throne, and of course, a round of book recommendations. Now let's get to the show. Hi, Jeffy. Welcome to What You Read Next podcast.
Well, thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
So happy to have you here. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, let's see. I live in beautiful Santa Fe, New Mexico, and I'm a full-time author, so I'm very lucky. I have a wonderful house with great views of the mountains and a husband and three grandchildren, a fourth on the way at this point.
That's amazing. So you're a published author of multiple books. So what was your journey to get your first book published?
Well, it was a little bit of a crooked path. I was in graduate school thinking I was going to be a research scientist. And I ended up, I wasn't very happy doing that. And I started taking classes with visiting writers. My first book actually ended up being a collection of essays because the writers that I took classes with were essayists. And so I originally started out writing essays.
Really?
And so my very first book is a collection of essays called Wyoming Trucks, True Love, and the Weather Channel.
Oh my God.
And that came out, and it came out in 2004. Mm. And at that point, I didn't really know what to do after that. And I had some offers from agents because it got some good reception, made absolutely no money. But agents were contacting me and saying, well, what are you working on next? And so I would tell them about this great narrative nonfiction book I was working on, and their eyes would roll back in their heads. And I thought, well, I don't know what I'm going to do with myself. And one morning I woke up from a dream about a scientist who had accidentally fallen into fairy. And I sat down and started writing this book, and it became what was eventually published as Rogue's Pawn, the first in the Covenant of Thorns series.
Mm.
Yeah, but that took a really long time because I had this brilliant plan when I wrote down this story that was, you know, very sexy and romantic and full of weird fairy things. And I thought, well, I know what I'll do because I always loved reading romance. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, what I'm going to do is just write this romance book, sell it for a bunch of money, and fund my career to write nonfiction. Which turned out not to be a great plan. I had a lot of trouble selling that book. People kept telling me that I was a good writer, but they had no idea where to place that book in the market. Mm. And if you recall, this is sort of in the early to mid 2000s, and really there wasn't fantasy romance at that point in time. It wasn't an actual genre. And I know that your next question is about what inspired me to write fantasy romance. So I'm kind of lumping these together. I didn't know that's what I was writing. I was just writing the story that came to me. And, you know, really, C.L. Wilson had just started to write her fantasy romances. There were a few other people, but there were not many of us who were doing really intense fantasy worlds that also had a lot of romance in them.
Yeah.
So what was happening was, here I was not selling this book and not selling this book and not selling this book, and I was getting really discouraged. And I saw a call for Red Hot Fairy Tales. And I had an idea to write a very sexy Beauty and the Beast story. And I wrote that and sold it immediately, like right away. And I actually cried when I got the email, not a call, but an email saying they wanted to buy it. Not because, and they weren't tears of happiness. It was like, why did this very erotic fairy tale sell when my book that I loved hadn't? And, but what happened was, as I started writing more erotic romance and stuff like that, and it let me start publishing with Carina Press. And Carina Press were the ones, my editor there was the one who actually bought Rogue's Pawn and started me off on that journey. They were willing to take a chance on kind of an unusual genre. And my first agent read that book and loved it and messaged me and asked me if I had representation. And then she ended up selling my 12 Kingdoms series to Kensington Books. So that's kind of how all of that happened. It's not a very clean or easy to tell journey.
Yeah, I think when you think about book publishing, you assume it's just like you write the book, you sell the book, and everything's like falls in place and you have multiple books after that. But the reality from what I've heard and from what I've seen is that it doesn't always work that way. You know, there's multiple publishers, there's multiple editors, multiple book ideas, and you kind of like just go with the flow and just seeing what the next right action happens.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly right. And nobody has, maybe very few people have an entirely smooth journey. You know, there's always lots of ups and downs and setbacks and successes. And that's why it's really important that you write the story that, or the stories that make you happy, that really mean something to you.
Yeah. And I have to say, I read fantasy and I read romance, and it's very rarely that I get to see both genres within one place. And it's such a treat because it brings the best of both worlds for me. The world building.
Oh, that's so great.
And then the romance, so that's like actually what I go for. So I'm like, this is perfect.
That makes me so happy because I'm the same way. You know, I grew up reading a lot of science fiction and fantasy, but I also love romance. And yeah, if I can have chocolate and peanut butter in the same place, that's my sweet spot.
Yes, it is such a treat. So keep writing, keep building this genre, and just keep out, you know, sharing your stories.
Thank you.
So let's talk about your writing. So do you call an outline or do you see where the story leads you?
I do not have an outline. I am incapable of outlining ahead of time. I'm one of those kids in school that when we had to write outlines, I would just write the report and then write the outline from that.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
So I call it writing for discovery.
Okay.
George R. R. Martin calls it gardening, but basically I have to, through the process of writing, I find out what the story is. So I'm often as surprised as anyone to see how things turn out.
I can imagine. I feel like that's something to be surprised, like how the characters show up, how the events that happen, maybe a character death, maybe some war scenes, they're just get uncovered as you just put the story together.
Yeah.
So how do you organize yourself as a writer? How do you keep track of the ideas, inspirations, or characters?
Well, for all that I am a very intuitive writer as far as drafting, I'm actually incredibly organized as far as everything else.
Okay.
My friends refer to me as the spreadsheet queen. Because I keep everything on Excel spreadsheets.
Okay.
And I track what I do. I have my timelines planned out for the next couple of years. I know I track very carefully how much I can write every day and sort of what my ups and downs are. And so I can project how I'm going to meet my deadlines. I write 5 days a week, and generally write about 3,000 words a day. And I'm very methodical and disciplined that way.
That's amazing.
I think I have to I have to build that structure because I am such a write for discovery writer. It's like mm-hmm. I just have to build in the time to do a lot of the writing and make sure that that happens.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. That makes sense. If you have the structure, you know, you're going to be writing and you have the places where the yes get dumped, then you can allow for magic to create when you're actually sitting down and writing the draft.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. And so, you know, as far as keeping track of the ideas and the characters and stuff, I do have an assistant who loves my books. Mm. And so sometimes I ask her questions and she'll say, oh, no, I'll have to go reread that book and find out. Oh, no. So that's really great to have her. And I have a small group of sort of readers that I can ask stuff of too. And otherwise, you know, like I just keep notes. I write in Word and I keep notes in notes documents on Word or in Excel spreadsheets.
I love it. So do you share your work along the way or do you wait till it's completed for others to read?
I usually don't show it all along the way. Occasionally I will. If I'm stuck or if I'm wondering how something resonates, I will share that with people. But more often, I will talk problems through with some of my writer friends. We'll sort of mm-hmm. bounce ideas off of each other. But yeah, at this point, I used to use crit groups a lot more early in my career. Mm-hmm. But at this point, I pretty much write the book and send it in to my editor.
Okay. That sounds good. That's easier to do. And, you know, yeah, you can talk it out whenever you find yourself stuck. But since the story uncovers as you write it, it makes sense for you to wait till it's completed so you know what the whole story looks like. That makes sense.
Yeah, you know, if you show stuff to people too soon, it can really get in the way of the story, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine. Because they might have feedback and you're really... But that may not be where the story's going to lead. That's not the arc that you're looking to create. That may deviate from it.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about the Orchid Throne. So tell us about just a brief synopsis of what the book is about.
Well, the book is about a very young queen who sort of presents herself as a untouchable virgin queen who's supposedly engaged to the emperor. Mm-hmm. And all she cares about is protecting her island kingdom of Calancy. Mm-hmm. And there is a slave rebellion going on elsewhere in the empire mm-hmm. and being led by Conri, the slave king, they call him. Mm-hmm. And he comes to her island kind of intent on conquest, intent on chasing a magic ring that she wears, mm-hmm. and hijinks ensue.
Yeah, there's a great fantasy, there's great world building, and there's great romance, which is like amazing. So,
oh, thank you. I'm so glad.
Yeah, so this book is about, it's part of a trilogy. So there's a lot of world building that happens because you want to set up this stuff. How much work did you spend setting up, building the world within this empire?
Well, I don't spend a lot of time on world building outside of writing.
Okay.
That's part of my process of writing for discovery is I kind of discover the world as I write the story.
Mm-hmm.
So I often feel like I'm channeling the world from another place.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'll think about it a lot. I'll daydream about the story a lot and think about how it looks. And I bring together things that I like. I love the Caribbean. So a lot about Calancy is influenced by the Caribbean. And a lot of it has been influenced by recent politics too. There was a when I first started writing that book, it was right after the last U.S. election, and I was thinking a lot about politics and how you fight things and how you don't fight things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see the role of politics within the book. I can see that it's weaved together in a way that's subtle, but it's still vibrant there. And it's great to know about the Caribbean, because I saw it as a more tropical, which is true, it's the Caribbean. It's a tropical island where there's beautiful flowers and pleasure and just kind of like fun place to be. So that's awesome.
Yeah, it's supposed to be just a paradise, you know, the most beautiful place in the world. And that's part of why it survived, you know, because the emperor regards it as the jewel of his empire.
Yeah. So you portray a war scene. So how did you get into the mindset to make it so vividly that you feel like you're in the, you know, the king of slaves is actually taking over territory? It felt like you're part of it.
I don't know. I'm glad it was vivid. I thought, because you sent me the questions ahead and I was looking at that one and I thought, I don't know how I get into that mindset. Maybe it's the same thing because I sort of experience the story as I write it. So I imagine, you know, how it looks and mm-hmm. how it smells and sounds and all of that sort of thing. You know, I read a lot, and so I'm always interested in games of strategy and how people, how they plan to do stuff. Part of the battle scene that's a key component in the book is that there's this secret weapon that I called Bergstein, which is an explosive rock, and they're using mm-hmm. that, and it stinks of sulfur. Mm-hmm. And part of why I did that was because so many fantasy books take place in worlds that have absolutely no tech, you know, with all like bows and arrows and swords. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to do something that was, you know, like somewhere in between that, where mm-hmm. there was a little bit of something that wasn't just completely medieval, but mm-hmm. actually there was a kind of weapon. So that was a big part of that battle.
Yeah, I love the whole scene of rocks that you use, and the magical rocks, but also the rocks in the not the armor, the weapon that Conry has, that, you know, the role of it, that it just seems unique to the world. That I don't think that would be in other places.
That's cool. I'm glad. I wanted it to be unique to the world.
Yeah, it is. So how do you say Euthalia? Is that
right? Yeah, Euthalia.
Okay. So mm-hmm. Euthalia is a really smart and strong protagonist. What was your source of inspiration?
I actually know this one. I don't always have a specific inspiration, but in this case, it was Queen Elizabeth I.
Ooh, okay.
I was watching one of those movies where Kate Blanchett was playing Queen Elizabeth I. Mm-hmm. And I just loved that idea of her being the Virgin Queen and the kinds of things that she did to consolidate and retain her power, and how mm-hmm. she protected England and how she defeated the Spanish Armada. So all of those things played into the story. Including the gowns. That's part of why Euthalia has these elaborate gowns, because I wanted to play with that, the Elizabethan look.
I love it. Yeah, I can see that. You know, I love the whole setting of the ladies in waiting, the whole getting ready, this big game of strategy about how to keep the emperor at bay, mm-hmm. and maintaining this whole idea of general, you know, pure queen that's, you know, taking care of her country. It seems like a unique protagonist to have.
Yeah, for sure.
So we know that Conry and Mia are fated to meet. Why them as a couple?
Well, part of it is the romance structure. I wanted two people who were about as different as I could make them.
Mm-hmm.
So I pretty much started the story with her because I knew that I wanted that Elizabeth I kind of character. And then I was thinking about what would be the guy who would be like, who would really challenge everything that she is. So mm-hmm. for all the ways that she is cool and cautious and logical and encourages science in her court and, you know, wants to take the low road, he is everything opposite of that. He is uneducated. He is brash. He is hot-headed. But he's succeeding where nobody else has because it hasn't occurred to him that he could fail. And also he has nothing left to lose. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he really doesn't have anything to lose. He's like, you know, I'm going to go back to be a slave. So I might as well just liberate and just, you know,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and it's so true. They're really opposites, but they complement each other. I think that's why the chemistry is like so sizzling, is because they are opposites you attract.
Yes. Yes. And they give their strengths to each other, you know, where the one is strong, they fill in for each other.
Yeah, that's so true. I can't wait to see what comes up in book two and book three, how this, you know, relationship evolves. Because I can imagine it's just
longer
with time.
Yeah, and this is a fun trilogy for me to do that way because I do get to do the same couple over the whole trilogy. And mm-hmm. so I got to take my time with their romance and take them from this, from being enemies, where she actually takes him prisoner and considers executing him, to a partnership.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was good. You know, I think for me, it felt like slow burn because it took some time for it, but it was like once it happened, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm all for it. but it was like, okay, where's the romance? Where's the romance? And that's because I read a lot of romance and I'm so used to the either it comes really early or it comes really late. And this one just felt slow burn with opposites attract, which is like my go-to trope. And then it sizzled. The moment they got together, it was like, oh, this is what we're here for.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah. So I expect that the fight with Inyor and the Emperor is on its way. So what can we expect from book two or book three?
Well, we can't be too spoilery. I have written book two, so I know. Book three, I'm not exactly sure what's going to happen because that's how I write. But in book two, they're going to have to figure out what they're going to do to defeat the Emperor and keep him from attacking and destroying Calanthe.
Yeah, I can't wait to read it. Oh, my gosh. So looking forward to it. So now let's get to...
That's so great.
Yeah. So now let's get to a round of book recommendations. This is an opportunity for you to share to our audience what they should read next. So here's a few questions. You're just going to answer them as it comes along.
Well, we'll stick with fantasy romance since that's what we've been talking about. Another great author of fantasy romance is Grace Draven. Her book, Radiance, was very popular. My favorite of hers is Master of Crows. And we actually became friends after I read Master of Crows and loved it so much.
I love it.
And she has a new series out. The newest book is the first in a trilogy called Phoenix Unbound.
Ooh. Oh, my gosh. I'm going to add it to my TBR. So what has
been...
What book that you have read this year that you love?
A book that I've read this year that I loved. I really loved Maria Vale's Wolf books. I read all three of those. Yeah, I highly recommend them because they are shapeshifters, but it's a different take on it, and it's wonderfully evocative of an actual wolf-like nature. Being a biologist, I really appreciated the kind of detail she layers in. And then they're wonderfully romantic too.
That's awesome. What is your go-to book recommendation? What's the book that you recommend to other people? If they ask you, it's like, what book should I read next?
It's very often whichever one is on my mind recently.
Okay.
I don't know that I have a go-to book recommendation. If somebody asks me for really good female-driven fantasy, mm-hmm. I will often recommend Jacqueline Carey's Kushiel series.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty dense at this point. She wrote those starting in the 80s, but that is absolutely, I think, an incredible, especially that first trilogy, starting with Kushiel's Dart. I'm always recommending that to people.
I love it. So tell us where I can find you online.
Well, I have a website. That's jeffykennedy.com. And all of the links to my social media are there. I am on Twitter a lot. I'm on Facebook and on Goodreads. I also have a podcast that's called First Cup of Coffee, where I just talk for about 20 minutes over my first cup of coffee in the morning, kind of chat about what it's like to be a career author and what I'm working on and just sort of what's on my mind.
I love it. I'm going to link the podcast, so thank you for sharing.
Yeah, oh, I love podcasts.
Thank you so much for being on the show, Jeffy.
Sure, I'm really glad to be here. I appreciate you having me.
Thank you, Jeffy, for a great interview. For show notes and a list of books mentioned in this podcast, please visit whattoreadnextblog.com. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with another author interview. Have a great week.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whattoreadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you so much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.